Chapter 5. While his seneschal organized the forces of the Dark Angels, the Lion made his way to his personal arming chamber. 5 Legion serfs were awaiting him inside the stone-clad room, dressed in dark green surplices with heavy boots and gloves. Each wore a pistol at his belt too, though the Lion had encountered no enemy on his way there, and they appeared unmolested. The reports of attacks were growing in frequency as the Nephila, or whatever their immaterial assailants were, seemed to be widening the breach from warp space to allow more of their kind to manifest. The walls of the chamber were covered with weapons of dazzling variety, either made for the Primarch or seized as spoils of conquest from the hundreds of cultures he had encountered during the Great Crusade. It had begun with his first Calibanite shortsword, presented to him by Luther on acceptance into the Knightly Order. That simple blade held pride of place at the centre of the display. It was the one affectation he allowed himself, this collection of weaponry. He had spent long times here contemplating the many ways mankind had devised to kill an enemy, though of late his throne chamber had been a more regular haunt. He paused for a moment of thought, moving along the walls, touching a hand to favourite pieces, running a gauntleted finger along blades and spikes in appreciation of their craftsmanship. In war, just as in other pursuits, mankind was creative, showing insight and genius, even with the most barbaric level of technology. Many of the weapons were too small for his fist and were mounted for ornamentation only, while others served a different purpose in his hands. Swords for normal men wielded as knives by the Lion. Some were traditional, ancient designs, while others had monomolecular edges, power field generators, electro fields, and other technological improvements. There were spatha, long swords, bastard swords, mortuary swords, flambards, rapiers, sabres, scimitars, kopeshes, kolishmards, tulwars, shotels, falchions, misericords and cutlasses, myrmeks, cestus and knuckle dusters, basilards, stilettos, dirks and daggers, cleavers, sickles and copies, mattocks, clubs, picks, maces, flails, morning stars, mauls and warhammers, hatchets, tomahawks, hand axes, double-bladed axes, long-bearded axes and adzes, pikes, partisans, fauchard, serissas, vouge, lachaba axes, boar spears, tridents, halberds, scythes, half-pikes and hasters. He did not rush himself, but took the time to collect his thoughts, considering the enemy of the day. In his youth, he had slain Nephila with his bare hands out of necessity, though they were all but impervious to most mortal weapons, another benefit of his Primarch heritage. This day he would go armed, and he took up 2 blades, heavy hand-and-a-half broadswords by the reckoning of normal men, but easily held in each fist by the giant Primarch. They were superbly crafted, the product of a Calibanite artisan whose name had been lost to history. Their names were inscribed along the edge of each blade in florid lettering, Hope and Despair. Each had a long fuller to lighten the blade weight, and they were edged with a crystalline compound sharper than any metal, unbreakable and never needing to be sharpened. The Lion had found the pair of swords used as ceremonial pieces by one of the Order Masters, and becoming enchanted by their glittering edges, had insisted on a trade, gaining them for the exchange of an unblemished sable sabre pelt the Primarch had prepared by his own hand. Armed with the twin blades, the Lion joined his allotted company at the main gateway above the reactor rooms and warp core, where the fighting was fiercest. Several wounded legionaries were being dragged up the access ramp, suffering a variety of horrendous wounds, burns and slashes through their armour that had gouged down to the bone.
"Fight with pride, die with honour," said the Lion, raising his sword in salute to his little brothers.
They fell in behind their Primarch, forming 5 lines, each 50 strong. The corridors were littered with the dead, unarmored serfs and crew for the most part. Their ragged bodies were heaped in bloody piles and choked the doorways to side chambers. Some had heads or limbs missing, others were little more than blackened lumps of charred flesh. Some were arranged in lewd poses with each other, eliciting a growl of disgust from the Primarch. Here and there, flies and maggots were already crawling through the filth of the dead, burrowing beneath the skin of the fallen and feasting on lifeless eyes. The Lion heard muttered curses uttered by his company, but had no desire to silence them. for he felt like cursing also. He stopped as he came across the form of two dead dark angels. He knelt beside them. Their armour was half melted as if by acid, and their skin was pockmarked by blisters and buboes. Caliban had occasionally been racked by strange plagues, and the clusters of triple pustules that corrupted the skin of the pair of dead space marines struck a chord in the memory of the lion.
"We have to burn the dead, lest corruption spread," he said solemnly as he straightened.
A trail of slime, like that of a snail, only a metre wide, led away from the bodies and passed into one of the passages leading away from the main corridor. The Primarch detailed a squad to hunt down the creature that had left the trail and pressed on towards the main engine room several hundred metres ahead. From nowhere, eight Nephila sprang into being ahead of the Primarch. The warp rift had become so strong that it took almost no time at all for the attackers to materialise. These creatures were vaguely humanoid in shape, with lean, hunched bodies and wiry arms. They had legs like those of a dog, and their flesh was the colour of blood and faintly scaled. Their heads were elongated with black horns running back along the sides. In clawed hands, they held triangular swords of gleaming bronze. Eyes of pure white regarded the lion for a moment while forked tongues licked needle-like teeth. With snarling war cries, the Nephila attacked as one, raising their swords as they rushed towards the lion. He did not wait for the enemy to come to him, but sprang forwards to meet them. In his left hand, Hope parried two blades swinging towards his groin, while Despair hacked through the neck of one of the creatures, parting the immaterial tissue of its body without pause. The lion felt a shock of energy ripple through him from his hand as the creature exploded into a shower of blood, coating the floor and the lion's armour with crimson. There was no pause to marvel at this strange death, for the remaining seven creatures were trying to encircle the Primarch. Bolt shells whined and cracked as the other dark angels did their best to help their commander. The detonations had little effect on the Nephila, but provided distraction. Sweeping Hope in a wide arc, the lion sheared through an upraised blade and parted the bodies of two more attackers even as he stabbed Despair through the face of another. The blades of the Nephila bit at his black and gold armour, cutting deep into the enamelled plates in a way no mortal weapon had ever done, though the lion's flesh remained unmarked. Parrying another swing of an infernal blade, the lion twisted and brought Despair down onto the head of a Nephila circling behind him, cleaving through black horn and red skin. There was no skull beneath the flesh, and the creature collapsed into a crimson pool like the others. In two more seconds and a flurry of blows, the lion had dispatched the rest of his assailants, and his armour was awash with sticky red fluid. It smelt like blood, but he knew it could not be. The creatures had possessed no veins or arteries or hearts to carry such a thing. Perturbed by this discovery, the lion continued on, calling for his guard to follow swiftly as he splashed through the slick of red. He signalled Stenius, who had remained in the Strategium.
"How long until the warp drive is operational, Captain?"
"Less than 20 minutes, my liege," came the reply after a few seconds. "We have a problem, though. The enemy have driven the engineers from the warp core and are attempting to break into the containment chamber. Lord Corswain and Lady Fiana are trying to break through from the aft decks, my liege."
"I will meet them in the main core chamber, Captain."
The lion broke into a run, his long strides quickly leaving behind his company of dark angels. Corswain felt only a little better that he had Lady Fiana for company. The gaze of her third eye was devastating to the enemy, but she tired quickly and had to rest for several minutes between bursts. For those periods, it was up to him and the other dark angels to protect her with their mundane weapons. It was not impossible the Nephila could be destroyed by weight of fire or a particularly powerful blast of a las cannon or such, but it was hard work, and the force was expending ammunition and power packs at a prodigious rate. They had less than half the stores they had set out with by the time they reached the conveyors and stairwells that dropped down into the warp core chambers. They had encountered all manner of horrifying foes on the 2 kilometre journey afterwards, soaring disc-like beasts, ringed with razor-sharp claws and possessing mouths that could chew through a legionary's armour in a few seconds. 6-limbed entities with giant lobster claws and lashing tongues coated with venom, ever-changing apparitions with leering faces in their torsos that cavorted and wheeled about while spitting sorcerous fire from their fingertips. Corswain's original force of 200 Dark Angels now numbered just over half that. 28 had been slain or were in the Apothecarium. The others had been left as rearguard to defend against the enemy who could materialize anywhere. With his personal guard close by him, the Seneschal descended the main stairway into the bowels of the engine decks, while other squads split to clear out secondary access routes. The steps were littered with the bodies of dead crew. Amongst the decapitated and disemboweled corpses were a few legionaries, their black armour rent open, their flesh hideously corrupted and twisted. Corswain had no idea what could have caused such horrendous injuries, and agitation caused him to tighten his grip on his bolt pistol and power sword as they reached the deck below. All was clear, save for the stench of death coming from the bloated corpses of engineers and serfs. The passages here were lined with power conduits, piping and cables, which all showed signs of decay and disrepair, marked by patches of corrosion and slicks of moss and algae. Knowing that Steenius would never allow such a poor state to exist on his ship, Corswain was forced to conclude that the decrepitude was somehow a side effect of the Nephila's presence. The same was true on the next level down, and still no foe could be found. Meeting up with 60 of his Dark Angels, Corswain readied himself for the descent to the warp core deck. The corridor and stairwells thrummed with energy, but not just the power of the reactor that was being fed into the area. There was a tension in the air, an intangible shadow that clouded his thoughts. "The warp presence is almost total here," warned Fiana. Her face was screwed up with effort, sweat running down her brow and cheeks, her lip trembling. "If it were not for the lack of alarms, I would think the warp core had been breached." "Everybody stay alert," Corswain told his warriors, somewhat unnecessarily, he realized, as everybody was on edge. "No friendlies. Destroy everything that moves." He led the force down into the warp core sector. The walls were plated here, thick ferrocrete layered with adamantium. In layout, the deck was oval, a main corridor running around the core room itself, with branching passageways leading to monitoring stations and watchrooms. The dead were everywhere, some of them so horrendously mutilated that it was hard to tell that they had once been men and women. In the first 100 meters, Corswain counted 7 dead Dark Angels, 2 of them in the livery of Tech Marines. The first door to the warp core was another 150 meters ahead, and the piles of the deceased grew larger the closer they came to the gate. Gunfire sounded from behind, and at the same time a wave of Nephila poured from the doorway leading to the main core chamber. They were of a type, all small creatures with faces in their chests, their unnatural flesh a glowing pink colour. Sparks and trickles of fire dripped from the open ends of their splayed fingers as they gambolled and cartwheeled along the corridor. The Dark Angels opened fire, a hail of bolts meeting the Nephila 50 metres away. Corswain fired his pistol repeatedly, directing his shots against the same target, until finally the creature ruptured, clouds of pink mist erupting from the wounds. Rather than fall, the Nephila started to shudder and spin crazily, a juddering shriek emitted from its lipless mouth. Corswain stopped firing, shocked by what happened next. The pink Nephila was mutating, growing an extra head, splitting into 2 other forms. Its pinkness turned purple, and then into a deep blue, as 2 smaller versions of its former shape snapped into existence with an audible popping noise. The blue creatures snarled and frowned at their attackers, fingers flexing menacingly. The same was happening to others, turning the pink tide into a wash of pink and blue as other Nephila were torn apart by gunfire, only to re-emerge in their newer forms. Firing on semi-automatic, Corswain plunged forwards, sword raised. He was just a few strides from the front of the blue mass when a black beam seared past him. The third eye of Lady Fiana. It tore a gouge through the mass of Nephila squeezed into the passageway, causing their bodies to disperse into blue and pink sparks where it touched them. His pistol empty, Corswain swung his sword at the closest enemy, the power field-edged blade hitting the outstretched arm of the creature. The impact felt strange, not at all like the slowing of a sword cutting into flesh, nor like the sudden jar of a strike against armour. It felt as though Corswain struck some fantastic rubber that bent under the strength of the blow before rebounding into its former shape. Fiana's third eye blazed again, opening up a gap for the Dark Angels to plunge forwards into the midst of the foe. their bolters roaring, the sergeants' chainswords whirring and power fists crackling. Fire engulfed them, purple and red, crackling along the edges of their armour, seeping into the cracks and joins. Corswain's right greave was set alight, the paint peeling away to reveal the ceramite beneath, which started to slough away. As he chopped his sword into the leering face of an Aphila, he noticed in a detached way that the flame gave off no smoke, and that unsettled him even more than the fact that his leg was on fire. The edge of the pelt hanging down his back caught fire, but before the flames spread, they dissipated, vanishing as swiftly as they'd materialized. Turning his attention back to the enemy, he realized that they had all been destroyed. A multicolored mist hung in the air like droplets of dye in a zero-gravity environment. As he reloaded his pistol, Corswain signaled his Primarch on the direct command channel.
"My liege, we're about to enter the main core chamber," he reported. "How close are you?"
2 decks down, little brother."
The lion's voice betrayed no strain, though his next words were a testament to the ferocity of the opposition ranged against him. Corswain could hear feral howling and inhuman shrieking in the background, much of it cut abruptly short.
"I'm facing several dozen enemies at the moment. It will take me some time to slay them all. My force is moving up, about 300 meters behind me. Secure the core chamber, and I will meet you there shortly."
Acknowledging his Primarch's reply, Corswain reloaded his pistol and gathered his warriors, 7 fewer after the latest encounter, and headed towards the gateway to the core chamber. The gate itself was several meters high, the blast doors that had been brought down still in place, but torn and melted through, leaving a hole large enough to step through. Corswain expected the portal to be held against them, but no Aphila opposed the Dark Angels as they entered the portal way. High-pitched shrieking and wailing sounded from the main chamber beyond, a sound impossible for humans to make. Stepping through the breached barrier, weapons at the ready, Corswain moved into the hall housing the warp core. The core itself was in a heavily shielded, octagonal structure at the centre of the high-domed chamber, enclosed by layer after layer of protective sheaths. Mechanicum symbols were etched into the housing, forming an intricate web of lines and shapes filled with gleaming metal against the obsidian-like stone of the warp core. Dozens of Aphila, the pink and blue creatures they had just fought, were frenziedly hurling themselves at the core, clawing at it with their hands, trying to burn their way through with jets of pink flame. Their screeches were utterances of rage and frustration. Other creatures swirled about the upper gantries surrounding the core, swooping and climbing like Gadian sky sharks. The Aphila paid the Dark Angels no heed as they strode into the chamber, weapons levelled, intent as they were on breaching the warp core.
"Destroy them all!"
barked Corswain, opening fire with his pistol. The fusillade of the Dark Angels, bolters, heavy bolters, las cannons and missiles, ripped into the mass of creatures gathered around the core structure. Spreading out along the walkways, the legionaries kept up the murderous rain of fire, some turning their weapons towards the ceiling as the circling beasts above dived down with piercing screams, their tails lashing, the barbs and serrations that ringed their manta-like bodies undulating as they descended. The chamber filled with a swirling miasma of dissipating energy as the Dark Angels let fly with their fury, billowing clouds of warp power streaming upwards. Through the mist, Corswain saw something else moving, coalescing from the floating fragments that drifted up like embers from a fire. Something larger than anything he'd yet seen. Towering above the space marines, even taller than the lion, yet not so bulky. Red lightning flared from the mist, ripping through Sergeant Lenian's squad, cracking open armor and searing flesh in a long burst of raging energy. Their smoking bodies were flung through the air by the blast, smashing high up against the ferrocrete walls. The thing that emerged from the swirling maelstrom of dying Aphila looked like a giant nightmarish bird, at least 4 meters tall. It stood upright like a man, but its thin, twisted body was supported on legs like those of a hawk or eagle, taloned feet scarring the metal floor, leaving sparks in its wake as it advanced. Robes of fire hung from its torso, blown about by some unnatural wind. Its arms were long and sinewy, and in its clawed hands the creature held a staff made of solidified flame, ever-changing in colour. A pair of wings spread from the beast's back, almost reaching from one side of the chamber to the other, iridescent feathers trailing on the ground. It had two heads on long scaled necks, one like some grotesque vulture, the other serpentine, both crested with long multicoloured feathers that dripped red and blue droplets of fire. And its eyes. Corswain regretted meeting that abominable gaze in an instant, but was unable to look away. The Nephila's eyes were black. The black of the gulf between stars, the black of the darkest cave of Caliban. The Seneschal saw himself reflected in these ebon orbs, a tiny figure against the huge expanse of the universe, a tiny, insignificant mote surrounded by the enormity of existence. The Nephila lashed out with the tip of its staff, and more lightning filled the chamber, ripping apart another half a dozen legionaries. Bolter rounds exploded without effect against its ever-shifting hide, and las cannon beams reflected harmlessly from its wings. Lady Fiana stepped past Corswain, her whole body shaking as she pulled free her headband to reveal her third eye. The Seneschal ripped away his gaze from her just before that warp eye was opened and watched the beam of darkness that sprang towards the Nephila. It struck the creature full in the chest, detonating with a flare of dark energy, rocking it back a step, but doing no more. With a horrified gasp, Fiana unleashed her warp sight again, but this time the Nephila released one hand from its staff and stopped the beam with its palm. The energy coalesced around its fingers, playing from fingertip to fingertip like a miniature storm, while its snake head arched down to examine the flashing cloud of power. Eyes narrowing, it looked up at Fiana and thrust its hand back towards her, releasing the energy. The navigator shrieked as her body was engulfed by blackness, veins and arteries pulsing under her skin, blood streaming from her eyes, ears and nose. She fell and lay unmoving. Corswain turned his attention back to the Nephila and raised his pistol. Both of the creature's pairs of eyes were scanning around the chamber, necks craning to take in all of the dark angels. With a sweeping gesture, it sent a wave of power surging across the hall, smashing the legionaries from their feet. Corswain was hurled back with the others, crashing to his back beside the portal way. Stretching up to its full height, the Nephila turned both heads towards the Seneschal. It seemed to relax, staff held out to one side in one hand, the other stroking through the fires of its robes. As all four of those black eyes fixed upon him, Corswain felt something inside his head, like a warp translation, but sharper, like a pinprick in the centre of his mind. He tried to block out the sensation of fingers pulling apart his thoughts and memories, examining them one by one, but could not stop the creature's mental assault. Suddenly, the Seneschal's limbs went numb. He stood up, with no volition, but was otherwise immobile. Around him, the other dark angels were just recovering from the shockwave of the creature's last attack. Corswain tried his best to resign himself to his death. But it was hard. He never had thought his life would end like this, as helpless as a newborn, facing an enemy that he could not even begin to comprehend. He wanted to spit a curse or dedicate his last breath to his Primarch and Emperor, but he was denied even this honour. His body was not his to control. The Nephila reached out a bony finger and beckoned him forwards. Lashing out with an armoured boot, the lion sent the hound-like beast tumbling down the corridor. Taking half a dozen strides, the Primarch brought both of his swords down across its back as it tried to right itself, carving it into three pieces that spattered into gore across the decking. He stopped for a moment to assess the situation. The flight of stairs down to the main core chamber was only 50 meters ahead, and the passageway was free of enemies. He could hear his company fighting behind him, the retort of bolters echoing up from the stairwell he'd just left. Though he knew his little brothers were in a dire situation, he had to focus on his objective, regaining control of the core so that the warp engines and Gellerfield could be engaged. The comm buzzed as he stepped forwards, and he heard Corswain's voice. The Seneschal sounded strained, as if speaking through gritted teeth. "My liege, the way is clear to the warp core. You must come at once. There is something else here, something we cannot destroy." The comlink hissed for a few seconds. It wants to speak with you." The lion entered the warp core chamber at a full run, taking in the scene in a few seconds. Several dozen dark angels were stood around the perimeter, their weapons directed at a monstrous bird-like Nephila, but not firing. In front of the creature was Corswain, standing immobile just a few metres from it, arms hanging limply by his sides.
"Cease your attack, or this one will be destroyed."
The words came to the lion's thoughts, directly bypassing his ears. Their tone was soft and melodic in contrast to the haggard, harsh-looking creature that had undoubtedly sent them. The Nephila's intent was immediately clear, and he skidded to a halt, coming to a stop with his swords held ready to defend himself. There was no reaction from his warriors, and he guessed that the words were directed to him alone. He did not know whether their passivity was voluntary or enforced, but it was clear they were in grave danger.
"It is not I that launched an attack," said the lion, taking a step closer to the apparition. "Leave now."
"And make a waste of all the effort that it took to reach this place? I have been searching for you a long time, Lion of Caliban."
There was something familiar about the creature's voice, like a half-remembered dream. The lion could not place from where, but it was not the first time he had heard this. His mind stirred with vague recollections of pleading and entreaty.
"Yes, that is true. I have come to you before."
"Get out of my thoughts!"
The lion stepped to his left and focused on blocking the creature from his mind, mentally bringing up a shield as though he were defending himself against a physical attack. It was a trick he had learnt as he had stalked Nephila on Caliban. One of the bird beast's heads followed him with its inscrutable gaze, the other stayed fixed upon Corswain.
"That might work in the real universe, but not here. You are in my realm now, or at least teetering upon the brink of it. You cannot ignore me this time."
"I do not treat with aliens," said the lion, taking a few more steps to his left, closing the gap between himself and the Nephila.
"Alien? Alien?"
There was despair in the voice.
"I am more than some simple creature of your universe. I am the giver and the receiver, the crux of fate, the master of the parallels. The past and the future are laid before me. Do not mistake me for some petty foe to be vanquished by mere might of arms."
"You have nothing to offer that I will accept."
The lion was directly behind the creature now, its snake head still regarding him with an unblinking stare, while the vulture transfixed Corswain.
"That is not true. However, you do not desire power, that much is plain. Your ambition is woefully stunted for one of your abilities. You are happy to let your brothers dwell in the light of your father's adoration. You even sacrifice your own to stay true to the memory of what once was."
The two necks were starting to cross each other as the lion continued his circling. He resisted the lure of the accusation in the creature's words, which echoed with a taunt made by the night haunter.
"Freedom, Lion of Caliban, I can give you freedom. You know that you do not really care for these lesser beings. They are a distraction to you. Their frailties, their petty squabbles, are unnecessary trifles to be avoided. Even this war that you fight, it is without consequence."
"Horus cannot be allowed victory."
"Horus's victory is not your concern. All things are fleeting, even the lives of great war masters. I have witnessed the rise and fall of every civilization in the universe. None of them can endure. Chaos always consumes them, in the end."
That word, chaos, resonated through the lion's thoughts. He had a fleeting glimpse of eternity, of the entropy of the universe, ever-changing, new lives born out of death, of stars decaying to create worlds and worlds dying to form new stars, all in constant flux.
"The Emperor has shown us a new way. The imperial truth will endure for eternity."
Laughter resounded inside the Primarch's skull.
"Foolish! Your emperor is nothing more than a fraudster with grand ambitions. His empire is no greater than any other edifice of mankind, and it will tumble just as easily."
The words were spoken with scorn, yet they lit a spark of hope in the lion's breast. The creature spoke of the emperor in the present tense. It thought that the master of mankind still lived. The Nephila could not follow the lion's progress any further with its snake eyes, and for a moment it broke its gaze from Corswain, serpentine head swinging towards the seneschal, while its vulture-like visage fixed on the Primarch. It was only a split second, but it was all the lion needed. Before its gaze was on Corswain again, the lion launched himself at the Nephila, sword outstretched. With astounding speed it reacted, twisting its whole body in his direction, staff coming up to spew forth a sheet of forking energy.
"Kill it, Cor,"
snarled the lion, as wreaths of crackling energy enveloped him, sending pain coursing through every limb, surging into his chest and pounding in his head. With a roar, the Primarch broke free from the net of lightning that surrounded him, still lancing his sword towards the Nephila's body. A hail of fire hammered into the creature from the encircling dark angels as Corswain leapt away, the seneschal's bolt pistol spitting rounds.
"Predictable fool!"
The Nephila's staff swept out, turning aside the lion's first blow. Twisting, wings furling, the creature sidestepped the lion's charge, its serpent head lashing out towards his throat with bared fangs. The lion turned mid-stride, dropping hope which had been deflected by the Nephila's parry. His gauntleted fingers curled around the slender serpentine neck as the Primarch allowed himself to fall to the ground. His grasp unbreakable, the lion dragged the Nephila down with him, its chest plunging onto the waiting point of despair. Harmed but not slain, the Nephila reared up, taking the sword from the Primarch's grasp, wings spreading once more, now bat-like and shimmering gold. Its vulture's beak rammed into the side of the lion's helm as it sought to pull its other head free from his grip. Wings beating fiercely, it tried to lift away, but the lion's grasp held firm as he was pulled back to his feet.
"Did you see this coming?"
snarled the lion, hammering his fist into the pommel of the half-buried sword, driving the blade fully into the Nephila. The Primarch felt a moment of contact, something deep within him connecting with the substance of the Nephila. His anger raged, finding conduit through his arm into his fist, giving vent along the blade of the buried sword like white fire pulsing from the lion's heart. The creature's piercing shrieks ripped through the lion's mind. Its body burst into a globe of power, filling the chamber with expanding flame that sent the Primarch reeling, droplets of a molten sword pattering against his armor. Silence descended. The black of his armor was covered with a patina of roasted gore, and his mind was still throbbing with the death scream of the Nephila. The Primarch picked himself up, retrieved hope from where it lay on the deck, and made his way over to the warp core control panel. Much of it was scorched and broken, and he started to pull away cracked panels to expose the circuitry beneath. He made a quick assessment of the damage and activated the comm.
"Captain Stenius, I will have the warp engines operational in 7 minutes. Ready the Geller field and prepare for translation."